The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It has been revealed that ants can carry out life-saving surgery, including medical intervention all the way up to amputation on their colleagues when their colleagues become injured. There is only one person that we could ask to explain this to us. That is biologist, environmentalist, broadcaster and author Aina Ní Lána. Aina, good morning.
Good morning, Anton. How are you doing? Am I delight relief from the politics?
You are always light relief from almost everything, Aina.
Thank you so much. Hit us
with the ants. What exactly is it that they've been revealed to do?
This is a queer story altogether. What you're describing is a study that they have carried out where they actually looked at ants. Ants are a group of creatures that live together communally. They have a queen. They all work together for the common good. So if one of them gets injured, then the whole colony will be down the man, if you like. So they have to make sure that this is not going to cause terrible hassle to the colony. So if they get an injury on their leg, which is because they have fixed legs and their legs are very important, action has to be taken. And so what they do is they lick the wound. Now, it depends on where the wound is. See, like ourselves, they have a femur and a tibia and an ankle. So you have three parts to the leg. Now, if the injury is to the middle or the lower part of the leg, they lick that and their licking makes it better. But if the injury is to the thigh, to the upper part of the leg, obviously the licking isn't going to work and they know this. And they just amputate the leg at the hip, as it were. They all go along and bite it off and then the ant runs around with five legs instead. So this, of course, was a great source of amazement because they actually went along and collected ants and gave them little nicks in their legs to see how it would happen. And this is what they discovered. So the wonder was, how did the ants know when an injury was bad enough to amputate the leg? And how did the ants know when it needed licking? It only needed, you know, give a kiss and sit in mammy's knee to a better kind of thing. I don't know. But this is what they discovered. And it all had to do with, apparently, where injuries would go around the body. So if it was higher up at the thigh, a fatal disease would happen to the ant. And I suppose it might pass to the other ants in the colony. So they wanted to get rid of that nasty leg before they all got sick and died. Whereas if it was only a bite to the ankle, kissing the sweet and the cuddle of mammy's knee would do them grand, as it were, in the ant world.
Now, I would have thought that an ant's little brain didn't have sufficient capacity to be able to make judgment calls on the severity of leg injury.
This is why this research is so mind-shattering in actual fact, because sure, who of us did? But the thing is that colonial creatures, I mean, bumblebees, for instance, or honeybees, or ants, they have a queen, they all live communally. And so they seem to think with one mind as to what is good for the whole lot of them, rather than individuals. There's no individuals there. And then certainly we know a lot about honeybees because they're so well studied. And depending on the condition of the queen, the behaviour in the hive is different. If she's getting old, they make special cells so that she lay eggs that will become drones or queens. If they find a source of honey, they do wiggle dances and just tell each other where they are so they can all go off to get the honey. If something comes into the hive that they shouldn't have, like a mouse or something, the troops are rallied and they sting the poor thing to death and they're all called back to do this. So they do have a way of communicating with each other on gross things like food and the condition of the queen and an anemone like a mouse. But to find that the ants could actually know that one fella, I mean, you can hardly see the ant, never mind the leg, never mind the injury on the leg, that's weird with our eyes. And yet they were able to get the pheromones, get the smell, get the actual vibrations from the sick ants that this was a thing that was going to affect the whole hive or the whole ant's nest if they weren't careful. So this is obviously what works. If they had cut off the leg and it didn't work, well, then that behaviour wouldn't be continued. But when it did, then this is, you know, survival of the fittest and the evolution of matters. But it was a really interesting thing to discover. And there's an awful lot more in the world that we don't know. We think we know everything, but we don't, do we?
Now, can you explain the thing out of this to me, Aina? Because you put on your biologist hat. I remember years ago reading a study, and what the study revealed was that there is a certain breed of spider. I don't know what spider it is. But it is a certain breed that has two different sort of types. There's a hairy-kneed type and a non-hairy-kneed type. And what scientists discovered was that the non-hairy-kneed type found both the hairy-kneed and the non-hairy-kneed attractive sexually. The hairy-kneed only found the hairy-kneed attractive sexually. This is the outcome of the research. What I was always baffled by was, who decided to look into what hairy-kneed spiders find attractive? In the same way, Who sat down and thought, you know what we should do, lads? Let's injure some ants and see what they do.
Yeah, people have too much time on their hands, really, when you think about it. But the hairy-kneed spiders, I presume, they were studying the mating habits of them, and they had them around, because spiders, of course, are cannibals and eat each other, so it's very difficult to actually mate, because if you're not careful, she'll bite the head of you when you're gone. So you can imagine you would be careful with whom you mate it. But they were presumably discovering all of this, and when they put spiders together with their own species, and then some of them wouldn't mate at all or wouldn't go near each other, they had to investigate further, and then they discovered that the hairy-kneed ones only fancy the hairy ones, whereas the baldy ones would like both. And that was an interesting thing as well, as to what vibes they were giving off. I mean, was it the males, females, females, males, or did everyone fancy everybody? Did all hairy ones fancy hairy ones?
To be honest, it is so long since I perused that particular study.
You just thought the hairy bit was very good indeed, yeah. So, I mean, you know, these kinds of studies then, you know, give us some ideas into, you know, survival of species and that, because if things can't mate, they go extinct, and that's the bottom line, really, in the
now,
sense.
There's a thing on that as well that I want you to tell me whether I have right or wrong. The ant thing is interesting in some way, because the ants are not taught this skill. It is hardwired.
It is innate, yeah.
Am I right in saying that there are instances where more complex animals are born with innate skills? Was it proven that back in the day of the blue of the bottle, the milk bottle, that blue tits ended up passing down the capacity to get at the cream, that they got that genetically rather than learning it? Do I have that right?
Well, you do indeed. Now you're coming on, you're learning stuff. Yeah, but in this case, what happened was that the milk bottles were put on people's doorsteps with the silver foil and the cream up at the top, and some blue tits landed on it and pecked the cream and thought this is great. And they were able to do this, whereas the ones that didn't in the cold winters died off. So the ones that had this ability to do this, this mutation, if you like, if this is how evolution happens, somebody has a mutation and can do something queer. And if it's a good thing, it'll continue in the population. If it's a bad thing, we'll never hear of it again. But these blue tits were perched on the bottles, drinking the cream, and this gave them an advantage in the cold winter. This fatty food was wonderful for them. So they survived. They had more offspring. The offspring inherited this mutation. So it wasn't that they learnt it. But I'll tell you who did learn. The magpies learned. The magpies, because I remember at one point I used to get milk and I used to find the milk bottle broken in bits on the doorstep. So I waited for the milkman one morning and I said, are you throwing the bottles in from the gate? You know me, how polite I am. He says, it's them bloody magpies. I said, what? He said, the magpies think they're blue tits and they're landing on the bottles to see what the blue tits are doing. And of course, the bottle falls over and breaks and the magpies have it all. They're not the right size for this at all. But the magpies observe the blue tits. Well, they learnt it. Whereas the blue tits, the ones that had the mutation, survived because they had an advantage over the ones that didn't. And then, of course, we got rid of the bottles altogether and we couldn't open the cartons we got after that ourselves. Remember, we had these triangular things and nobody could open them at all before we ever had plastic lids tied on or not tied on.
Oh, don't start there. Let's not go down that road. There'd be monsters.
Those were the good old days. We had these triangular, whatever, they were like pyramid things.
Tetrapack.
And you had to get the tetrapacky things. I know, they were square ones, but there was triangular ones as well. They were even worse. I'd be wishing for a magpie with his big beak to come along and open it for you. But anyway, the magpies who are still crows are the clever of birds. Magpies are a member of the crow family, so they actually learn things. They actually can observe and learn stuff, which is very interesting. But the blue tits, those that had the magic mutation, were able to do it, and then there was more offspring of those, and then they all could do it. So it spread fairly quickly then, because, you know, blue tits have 8 babies, and if their 8 babies survive, well, other people have no babies because they haven't got this magic formula, well, then it won't be long till they all have this new mutation which benefits them.
I remember reading a similar thing about, I think I read about hedgehogs around the M25, that the hedgehog basic survival instinct is curl up in a ball. And if you live near the M25, that gets you smushed by an articulated truck. So the ones that live close to the M25, they run away from danger, which is an odd hedgehog behaviour.
Well, only because the ones that didn't were all killed, so the ones that ran away from danger. So again, it was a behaviour that wasn't normal, but that gave an advantage. And then once you have an advantage, then you're able to survive with the other ones with the normal behaviour in a particular environment. So, I mean, evolution is driven by environmental change. I mean, if you were an elephant in Africa and you had wonderful tusks, well, sure, you know, all the other elephants would fall madly in love with you, and that would be all great. But the poachers would fall madly in love with you as well. whereas there is a mutation in elephants in Africa where you have no tusks at all, and nobody fancies if you had no tusks, you just hung around looking like a spare. But when more and more of the elephants with the long tusks got killed by the poachers, the fellas with the no tusks got a look in because any port is a storm. And as a result, this mutation is spreading now in the African elephants. They don't grow tusks at all because the ones with the tusks were at a disadvantage from the poachers. Though normally they'd be at a huge advantage because they get all the women and they'd be grand and there'd be more breeding for them. So if the environment changes, well then if you have a mutation to cope, then you're at an advantage. So in a world like now where we have climate change and the world is changing very quickly, well, all of these changes are going to be looked at and they'll happen very quickly. Things with the mutations will survive, but things that don't have them won't. And, you know, they take a while to happen in some cases. So you could see the extinction of things because of the environment changing.
But we have had a significant, or rather human poaching has been so significant on the generational mutation within elephants that we are creating tuskless elephants by consequence.
That's right, yeah, because we killed all the ones with tusks. And there is a mutation that has them with no tusks. I mean, we're killing all the rhinoceroses as well because we want their horns because we think it's going to do great things for men's libido when they'd be far better off with Viagra. But the thing is now in Africa, some of the places where they have reserves in that, they're cutting off the elephants, they're cutting off the rhinoceroses' tusks while they're still alive. If it's only hair, like it's giving them a hard haircut, cutting their nails, it's not giving them any. So then the poachers won't get them because they don't have any tusks. That's all the or horns. That's all the poachers want. So the people who are minding them in places capture them, take off their horn and then left them off again so that they can survive without their horn, in fact. And that's what we are doing by our poaching. Isn't we awful as a species, really?
On that very positive note, Aina, as always, total pleasure. Aina and Leona there. And Aina has a book coming out that you should keep an eye out for. It is The Great Irish Book of Biodiversity. So keep an eye out for that.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.